Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
It is Monday night, November 16th, 2020. Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the reaction here on the Chairshot Radio Network. I am your host. My name is Harry Broadhurst. Joining me, as per usual, the Down Since Day One co-host, Mr. Tony Acero.
What up?
Unfortunately, the co-hostess with the mostesses is having some issues right now. I won't go into specifics. Our thoughts are with you, Liz. Hopefully you'll be able to be back sooner rather than later. But rather than put her business out there, I'll just state that we wish her the best and we hope she's back to the show soon. So, Tony, I thought about something with regards to our Survivor Series picks for this evening.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that the men and women's tag team matches, we can't really predict because we don't have all of the elements involved. We don't know who the fifth member of Team SmackDown's men's team is, and we still don't know two members of the SmackDown women's team. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here. I feel like you were going to say something else.
I don't think it's fair to predict those two matches because we don't have all of the information necessary to predict them.
Sure.
I mean, the men's team, we can make a prediction as to who we think will be the fifth person. And I know who I think it should be, but whether or not we agree on that, I guess we'll have to see a little bit later. We will predict the champions versus champions matches that are coming up, and one of those actually changed tonight on Raw. We'll talk about that a little bit later on in the show. Let's instead start with SmackDown, and as I pull up the SmackDown review, real quick, your overall thoughts on the whole Sasha Bailey thing here, because it seems like they're kind of moving Bailey back toward working with Carmella. Because as Sasha was in the ring on SmackDown, Bayley's music interrupted her, and she was about to be confronted by Bayley. But while she was distracted by Bayley coming down the ramp, Carmella came into the ring through the crowd, or what would have been the crowd, through the Thunderdome audience, and once again laid out Sasha with an X-Factor. Leaping Facebuster, Bella Buster, Poison Ivory, if you were Ivory. The finisher du jour of women they don't have a better move for. Which sucks, because I actually like your code of silence. But are you surprised to see them kind of taking the focus off of Bailey so quickly in order to transition it over to Carmella?
Yeah, kind of. I'm sure what they don't want is, I'm sure they don't want to stretch it any more than they have, but I think it's one of those two that I don't think people would be upset if they did. I mean, look at Drew and Orton. Like, you know, like, can we really be upset about, you know, a little bit more Sasha versus Bayley? But they had this debuting Carmella, and I'm sure they wanted to get her in the mix somehow, some way. So,
do you think Carmella plays a factor in Survivor Series in the match between Sasha and Asuka?
I don't know. I'm not really interested in Carmella. I don't really not, you know, I don't see a significant enough change. I don't see this as a different person. So yeah, it's just not to my liking. Not that I dislike it. I'm just not excited about it in the least.
I think the problem is it's a rehash of a gimmick we've seen before, and we've kind of talked about that on the podcast last week, because we said that similar to like what they tried to do with an Eva Marie and with a who else is it? Emma and Liv Morgan and Lana and a couple of others with this whole supermodel-esque gimmick here, that
yeah,
it kind of saddles the character rather than actually allowing them to be themselves.
Yeah, we've seen it countless times. It has never worked. I mean, who is this character even? Like, who is she? Outside of somebody who uses a lipstick on a mirror.
Other things to come from SmackDown is Drew McIntyre decided to crash the blueprint. I cannot fucking talk.
Right.
McIntyre decided to crash the blue brand. There we go. Once more in English, mm-hmm. Harry. As he showed up on SmackDown to issue a challenge to Randy Orton, to Roman Reigns, excuse me, stating that it wasn't Randy Orton that Roman needed to worry about, hence the Freudian slip there. It was Drew himself. That would prove to be somewhat prophetic, but again, we'll talk about Raw here in a bit here. There was talk going around that Roman and Drew might be a WrestleMania match next year. Are you surprised to see them teasing it for Survivor Series at this point? And then, I mean, I guess we might as well talk about it now, actually delivering the match at Survivor Series now that Drew's beaten Randy to win back the Raw title?
Not necessarily, no. I mean, you look at Drew in the ring with Reigns, and he looked like he belonged there. Dude was like, you know, I don't know, he had that big superstar feel to it. So I even wrote in my report tonight, it looks like they see money in Reigns versus McIntyre. And if that's the case, then we're getting, I mean, a relatively fresh matchup as opposed to the tried and true that, you know, Orton and Reigns would have given us. So without talking too much about the end of the Raw, I'm not bothered by the result. Like, it didn't, you know, make me feel one way or the other. So that could be a good thing. It's not that I was apathetic. It's just usually I'm up in the arms about something or I'm, you know, very happy about it. In this particular instance, neither occurred.
I think my biggest issue about it was is there was talk about them trying to keep the brand separate away from each other during the course of the build Survivor Series. And then everything you had done in that instance, going all the way up to this particular episode of SmackDown, had done just that. And then all of a sudden, you're just throwing that all away in order to have McIntyre randomly show up on SmackDown to wrestle the main event, Jey Uso.
Yeah, well, I didn't believe that for a second, so I wasn't bothered by it because it's just common course for WWE.
I set my expectations too high, I know.
Yeah.
Unsanctioned main event is where we go for SmackDown as McIntyre takes on Uso, as Roman tells Uso to take care of the McIntyre problem. It works about how you would think a tag team wrestler facing Drew McIntyre in the main event of a show would work. As Uso gets a surprisingly decent amount of offense in, but McIntyre puts him down with the Claymore at 12:33. Do you think that... Okay, how do I put this without coming off like a gigantic dick? Do you think they're wasting their time with Jay in the main event scene, knowing that he's probably going back to being a tag team wrestler when Jimmy gets healthy?
No, not at all. I mean, him in the main event has given us, you know, quite a few weeks of great television. So, no, it's not a waste at all. This is what a properly built-up wrestler should be. They should be able to, you know, be fluid between the main event and the mid-card. And people should be okay with it. That's how you get matches that kind of I'm sorry, that's how you get wrestlers that kind of withstand the test of time, because they can go up and down and you feel comfortable at either level. Now, arguably, Jay's still not main event material, but that's not his fault, because he's giving it his all for this whole fucking program. So you can't knock him at all for doing that when it's the writer's job to make them strong. So this is a buildup of Jay, and I think even if he goes back down to the tag ranks, this will do more for him than anything that has been done for him before. So, no, I don't think it's a waste of time at all.
Okay, do you think this is going to matter once Jimmy comes back?
I hope it matters. I hope that they get, you know, a little bit more trust in him and the tag team that he will eventually be a part of again. They're not slouches, you know. They've always been great. It's just a matter of how they present them, the WWE presents them. And that's WWE's fault. There's a very, very big reason why even the mid-card of AEW sometimes feels like, you know, a main event card. A, they're not on every week. You're not going to see you'll see the main players every week, but there's some people where you just, you know, you didn't see them this week. It creates this length of time to where you want to see them because of absence, but also you're excited top to bottom of the card. And WWE has always struggled with that. Their inability to create a show where namely everything is interesting.
I think overall SmackDown's done pretty well in that regard. I think the problem becomes Raw with the excessive amount of time that they have to fill on a week in, week out basis. We've talked about it many times.
Yeah, SmackDown has been great.
It's
not without its hiccups. But
we've talked about it many times here on the show that SmackDown's a much more cohesive television product because of the fact that it's only got the 2 hours to fill in. It doesn't have to stumble upon itself for its storyline conclusion.
Right.
Okay, I'm thinking that we might have a little bit of a disconnect in our connection. I'm thinking you might be a little bit behind me.
Just a sec. It'll probably catch up. It's cool. We'll be fine.
All right, so we apologize for talking over each other there. It's just one of those things where it's a rough connection. It happens sometimes. Block Talk Radio, what can you do? All right, moving forward to other things that happened. Apparently, we're finally done with Rey Mysterio and Seth Rollins. As Rollins and Mysterio have a no disqualification match on SmackDown, and Mysterio picks up the win after Murphy turns on Rollins again with a bicycle knee, setting up the 619 into the frog splash for the win for Rey Mysterio. A couple of things to touch on here. Without turning too mushy here, are you okay with Rey using the frog splash on the anniversary of Eddie's death in order to honor his fallen friend?
Yeah, it's fine. I wasn't offended by it. It didn't come off as pandering because it's Rey Mysterio, you know, so.
Right. It's not like somebody like Chad Gable hit a frog splash for Chad Gable getting a win on SmackDown. That's the way. Just made myself sad, Tony. But anyways, it's setting up another match between Murphy and Rollins next week on SmackDown in the go-home episode to Survivor Series to happen this Friday here. Do you think we see something to write Rollins off of the Survivor Series team, or do you think that Rollins gets his win back after Murphy cost him the match against Bray?
Hard to say. I mean, you know, time-wise, you would assume that this is so that Seth can go be a dad, but I don't think he needs his win back. Seth Rollins is in that, you know, arena where he should be helping someone else grow, namely Murphy, as opposed to, you know, trying to one-up him, or in WWE's case, you know, continue with 50-50 booking.
Yeah, we just saw Rollins beat Murphy a couple of weeks ago on SmackDown, so I think this should be the opportunity to give Murphy that win back and establish Murphy as a single star in his own right in the absence of Rollins. The problem is we're kind of light on heels on SmackDown, as evidenced by the main part of the show being focused on Rollins, Roman Reigns, and Jey Uso here. We don't really have much of a mid-card in terms of heels on SmackDown right now. Or at least not ones that they're focusing on a weekly basis.
I think we'll be fine.
We could always see more King Corbin, Tony. How's that? You like that?
You shut your whore mouth.
Is that what you want? Don't go, Seth. Don't leave us with... No, I don't... Honestly, I don't dislike Corbin. I think he's underrated, actually. He's one of the few guys in the company that's willing to play a heel, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I just think he's inconsistent.
And I don't disagree with that. I think he definitely has moments where he's a lot more adept at the character than others. I do think the King shtick needs to go. We've seen many times before that the whole King thing has been nothing but a burden upon the person that's got it. Look at what it did to the guy like Wade Barrett, or what it did to a guy like Billy Gunn, even though Billy was never going to be anything special anyway. But a guy like Sheamus and a guy like Barrett, when they got the King crown, it did nothing but halt their momentum.
Yeah. I wish Barrett made a comeback. That'd be fun.
Well, there is talk that he might be willing to wrestle in NXT. He's working at the announce desk right now, but that's because Nigel's stuck over in the United Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be surprised to see them bring Nigel back to the NXT announce desk at some point in the future, especially he's doing NXT UK. So it's not like he's completely disappeared from the WWE, unlike Mauro, who has stepped away.
Yeah.
I miss Mauro. I don't dislike Vic Joseph, but he's no Mauro.
There is no other Mauro.
All right, so the other thing to talk about from SmackDown in depth that I wanted to discuss with you is Chelsea Green catches yet another bad break. Literally, in this instance. Chelsea Green finally makes her long-awaited debut on SmackDown in a fatal four-way match to determine the next member of Team SmackDown, and the rumors are that she was supposed to win the match until she got drop-kicked off the apron by Liv Morgan and broke her wrist and had to have surgery and is recovering
yeah.
with what might be the cutest dog.
Definitely a shame, a really unfortunate, but, I mean, those are the breaks.
Groan. Are you proud of yourself, Athero?
I'm always proud of myself.
That's fair. I mean, I get that the whole, I guess Liv isn't a bad choice, given the circumstances here with her connection to Ruby, and... They have kind of casual ties with Bianca as well from when all three of them were over on Raw. So, I mean, I'm not opposed to Liv winning, but I do think that Chelsea winning this match would have been much more of a wild card present to Team SmackDown, which could have been added an interesting element into this match.
Yeah, and it's nice to know that they were willing to give somebody another chance, but, you know, just didn't work out.
Hopefully they don't hold this against Chelsea when she is able to come back to the ring in probably 2 or 3 months. Because we've seen injuries and stuff derail people before they've even had a chance to get started before, and SmackDown's women division is in desperate need of fresh talent. I mean, you have Sasha and Bayley up at the top of the card there, but they've been doing that story now with them as partners and now feuding with each other for the better part of a year. And now they're just starting
right.
to add Carmella. Now they're just starting to add Carmella into the main event scene, but neither one of us view that as a viable alternative. So the main event spot on the SmackDown Women's Division is still considerably open for somebody to take.
Yeah, and I think that's what they were going for. They're trying to bring some new blood in there. But you got Bianca chilling right there, too. And there's plenty of potential.
Well, spoiler alert, I'm actually picking Team SmackDown, and I think Bianca's the last woman standing in order to set her up as a potential challenger for Sasha.
That'd be nice.
See, that would actually make the Survivor Series matches mean more. We'll talk more about that one. No, save that for later, because I actually had an idea in order to make the Survivor Series matches mean more. But we'll save that for later. All right?
All right.
Let's go back to SmackDown here. Otis pins Dolph Ziggler in like 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay, but here's the important part. Otis is backstage after his win, and Chad Gable gets TV time.
You said important part.
Well, they're starting something called the Alpha Academy. And the idea is that Gable is going to take this opportunity to turn Otis into his own personal killing machine, as judged by the evil sneer that Gable was kind of giving after Otis walked away. The reality of the situation is that Gable and Otis are actually really good friends and probably asked to work together on television now that Tucker and Otis have been separated.
Yeah, I don't, I'm just not interested.
How dare you? I could see not being interested in Otis, but Chad Gable, man, come on.
Not just the character work, but the character itself. You think of like him putting together a team, you don't think Otis of being a part of that team. Just not, I don't know, did not pique my interest at all.
Our opening contest was Sami Zayn defending the Intercontinental Championship against Apollo Crews. And apparently Sami Zayn found out that he was defending the Intercontinental Championship against Apollo Crews at 7 p.m. on Friday, an hour before SmackDown started, which is honestly Sami taking a shot at creative because that's usually when they finish rating SmackDown.
Yeah.
That being said, Sami picked up a win via heel chicanery as he ties Apollo's foot to the ring ropes, the ones underneath that hold the ring canvas together, the ring skirt, and picks up a count-out victory in 2 minutes and 46 seconds. Okay, there are two ways to look at this here, and I want to get your thought on which way you're looking at it. You can either look at this as Sami being a conniving weasel, or Sami being the smartest guy in the SmackDown locker room.
Yeah, and I mean, honestly, either one fits his profile, so neither is all that offensive.
I like the finish, and I think it gives grounds for them to come back to this once we're past this Raw versus SmackDown stuff and establish Apollo as an actual challenger for Sami. I think Sami and Apollo could have really good matches together. Sammy's going to have to carry the feud charismatically because, let's be honest, Apollo has, like, negative charisma on a microphone these days. But I think Sammy's more than capable of doing so. And if anything, we were talking about the heels over on SmackDown. Sami Zayn is a guy who could definitely be used to do a lot more on the blue brand than he's been doing.
Yeah, I mean, really... He's been easy to miss.
And it's unfortunate because he's capable of so much more than what they've given him.
Well, to be fair, he hasn't had, you know, much time back, so there's more from him coming, I'm sure of it.
Last thing to discuss is the continuation of the conversations between the Street Profits and Big E. I'm not going to lie. I wouldn't be opposed to seeing Big E just beat the shit out of these guys. Like, I get the idea behind the concept of them trying to go to Big E for advice about Woods and Kofi. And I get the idea that Big E is more loyal to Woods and Kofi than he is to SmackDown, because of course he fucking is. Big E and Woods and Kofi have been on both brands over the course of the last 4 years. Why should he give a fuck what color t-shirt he's wearing? That being said, the way that the Street Profits are coming off during the course of these segments is making them seem like arrogant dicks. And you're just waiting for Big E to snap and just beat the fuck out of Montez or Angelo. Do you think this is setting Big E and a partner for going after the Profits once the Survivor Series is done?
No, I hope not. Big E doesn't need a partner right now. That's similar to, like, Peyton and Lacey getting together. There's not a reason for it. Like, either give them the singles push or put them back with New Day, you know?
I got bad news, Tony. Dolph Ziggler's on the same show as Big E. Get used to that again.
It's not happening.
That's what you think. That's a wrap for SmackDown. What do you got for an overall show rating?
Um, 7.5.
I'm a little bit lower than you were at a 7, but in fairness, there was only like 20 minutes of combined wrestling on the show. And you know how I feel about those kind of episodes.
Yep.
I get that a lot of the storytelling that they were telling needed to be told outside of the ring, but I think you can cut some of those segments a little bit shorter than what they were and have more actual in-ring content here. 12 minutes and 33 seconds for the main event. Nothing else on the show cracked 4 minutes. Oh, that's not true. I take that back. The No Holds Barred match was the longest match on the show. I'm sorry. I don't know why I blanked on that for a second. So I guess it was a little bit more than what I thought it was in terms of in-ring content. But either way, I still say 7. Whatever. I'm sticking by it. All right, 2 title matches to discuss on tonight's episode of Raw and a shitload of changes. But the most important thing that I'm going to start with, Tony... Mustafa Ali got a victory on Raw tonight.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he did.
Yay! I know we've beaten the dead horse that is Retribution on this show many times here, but they're trying kind of, sort of, ish, a little.
How does them getting a win push their narrative forward? What exactly is their narrative? What are they trying to do?
How are they trying to do it?
And how does that... Go ahead, answer it.
Their narrative here is that they are a cohesive unit that is willing to work together for the greater good of all of the members involved, whereas Team Raw is a bunch of individuals out for themselves who will do nothing but sink the ship at Survivor Series. And frankly, Ali had a point with that statement, as proven tonight by the inability of Team Raw to get along.
But the thing is, that has nothing to do with Retribution. Like, Team Raw, fucking, they were going to do this anyway against any team. So what does Ali get with a win? He gets more credibility as a WWE superstar, which is the antithesis of what he's looking after. You don't know their goal. Like, the goal, the overarching goal of this group of people, because the last thing we knew is that they got signed to cause chaos, but they can reel them in because they have a contract now. It doesn't vibe with me at all.
I mean, I'm an unapologetic Mustafa Ali mark. Will be the first person to say that on the show. And I've said it many times before. The thing about it is I think you have to give them these kind of wins. You have to give them wins on Raw in order to try to build them back up as a threat.
I'm not, like, honestly, the win is fine. But again, even the win is tainted. It was a roll-up. Like, is that the win that they want? That's just kind of weak. And I'm not saying that they don't need the win. You know, we asked them to shit or get off the pot, and they decided to, you know, take a dump. So we're going to get these people wrestling. We're going to get them winning, and hopefully they can bypass all the damage that's been done. My answer is that they can't, but they're going to try, and that's fine. I want these people to succeed. They deserve it. But as a story, it is incredibly weak.
Yeah, but they always do these teams that can't get along storylines. It's nice to see a team that's being portrayed as an effective unit. Yes, the finish could have been better for Ali rather than getting a roll-up one. Who did he pin with the roll-up? Was it Riddle, I believe? Yeah.
Yeah, of course it was Riddle.
So it would be nice to see it not be a roll-up in order to give some kind of actual credibility for Ali and more specifically Retribution as a whole. But at least this is a step in a positive direction compared to what they've been getting.
Yeah, I mean, of course. Here's what we're doing here. You're giving credit where it's due to the wrestler, and I'm saying the story is still garbage. So we're covering all bases here because I don't want to deny Ali the love, and I did give credit in the report. Mace and T-Bar showed a lot of unity. It's like they're like, let's do what we can to make this shit work. The double big boot, the tossing into the corner. Of Slapjack, like they're showing that they are a unit, you know, and that they're to be taken seriously. It just sucks that we can't forget everything that happened before that.
I would be okay with seeing Madden and Dijak get a tag team title opportunity against Woods and Kingston.
His name is T-Bar and Mace.
The fuck it is. If you're Vince, his name is T-Bar. If you're any rational thinking human being in this country, his name is Dijak. Okay, so actually that does bring me back to a point there. Have you had a chance to check out any of Ali's interview with Corey Graves on After the Bell? I'm guessing not because you're a busy person.
Yep.
Ali actually said, and the interview was done kind of in character and kind of not, Ali actually said that it was his idea to give them the names that they gave them so that way they could know what it feels like to be judged based solely off of the name and the look that they're given.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You told me that a couple of weeks ago. It's a, you know, nice little restructuring of storyline, but at the end of the day, it's just, you know, they're still shitty names.
And shitty looks. Not to say that the athletes are in poor shape. It's just that with the masks and stuff, they look like they're heading to a GIMP party.
I want to be very clear that it's going to take a lot to win me over. So anytime we speak about Retribution, it's not going to go in their favor. And that's not blind hate. It's just, there's just so much wrong that has been done. Like, just so much. I draw a blank when they come on TV. I listen to Ali, and then everything else comes into play, and you just realize, like, oh, well, it's still garbage. Like,
all right, six-woman tag team. I'm just going to do the matches tonight from Raw, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, it's fine.
Like, if there's anything material that you feel the need to chime in from the segments, by all means, feel free to do so, but I'm just going to kind of focus on the match. Six-woman tag team match opened the show as Lana teamed with Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler to take on Asuka, Dana Brooke, and Mandy Rose. Because it would make sense that you would want to put most of your team against each other with the woman who's going to have the singles match in this match as well. Brilliant fucking booking. The match itself sees Asuka tap out Lana with the Asuka lock at 6 minutes and 59 seconds. Aired about 4 of which was shown. The important thing to discuss in this match is that we had the ring step spot with Mandy Rose getting her arm stomped on by Shayna Baszler. Apparently Mandy suffered an injury last week, and this was done to write her out of Survivor Series. A little bit later on in the show, Mia Yim, or whatever dumbass name they gave her, I think it's Retaliation or something, attacked. Stupid. Like, I get the idea of Ali trying to retcon it, but it's still so dumb.
I think I said in the comments at 411, like, what was her name? Wrestle King or something?
I think she's actually Tiger Queen. if we're going to do this, can we at least be topical? Anyway.
No.
She attacks Dana Brooke backstage and curb stomps Dana into staging equipment backstage to take Dana out of the match as well. Dana and Mandy are then replaced on Team Raw by Lacey Evans and Peyton Royce, who have been petitioning to replace Dana and Mandy Rose since the team was announced. All right, let's start with the six-woman tag match, Tony. What did you think?
What is Asuka doing there? Why would she even agree to this match? Like, of course, one could say, like, well, she was booked, so she has to wrestle, and I get the logic behind that. But as a champion, like, I don't got a horse in this race, so why am I going to even tie myself up with this bullshit? Like, I got Sasha to worry about. Y'all do your little I hate each other thing and leave me out of it. That's how I would be. I don't know. Maybe Asuka's a fighting champion or whatever, but it just seems like such an afterthought, like just such an appendage that just doesn't matter. So it comes off as hokey. And then you got Nia Jax acting like a third grader saying psych and tricking Lana, who still, at least from what I'm seeing, and of course we're in a very dark corner of the internet, no one is feeling sympathy. No one cares. No one is feeling bad. Not just because of all the stuff that we've seen Lana do over several years, but because there's not a lot of interest here. And Nia is just, she's like that go-away heat. Like, I'm just not interested in seeing her in or around any match. Just not at all. Aside from that, you have this, like, I'm the captain. No, I'm the captain. Well, if I'm a captain of a team, wouldn't I want that team to, like, win? Like, look at AJ, who, to his credit, is doing great with what he's being given. At the very least, he's like, well, if I'm the captain, my team needs to work it out. Like, let's get this shit together, guys, blah, 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 blah. Nia and Shayna are not doing that. They're there to prove that they are the both dominant women, but one's more dominant than the other. I don't know. Everything that Nia does is annoying. And Shayna, it's weird to see NXT Shayna and then the Shayna that we see on Raw. One could deduce that the Shayna on Raw is more towards who this person really is. But I'm sorry, I'm not interested in who she really is. I was way more interested in the character that we were given, that we were presented. Now we're getting a little bit more personality and a little bit more fun in games, but it's not fun. And Shayna, the character, hasn't really been that way. You know, you came in biting the neck of somebody and now you're Nia's homie. Like, it just, I don't know. I'm not, this Raw, maybe I'm in a bad mood tonight, but Raw was just the shit, and this was a big reason. Between the piped-in crowd, the fake chant, the This Is Awesome chant when it wasn't awesome, Nia Jax saying psych, the New Day and Miz and Morrison sounding basically the same, yet being heels and faces, Jeff Hardy's weird-ass promo and chin grab, just, I was not happy tonight.
Okay.
Except for when Alexa showed up.
Keep your filthy paws to yourself, Acero.
Maybe that's the plan.
I'm going to break this down in parts. Asuka?
Anybody got time for that?
Nia?
Y'all wouldn't know entertainment if it slapped you in the face.
Lacey and Peyton replacing Dana and Mandy.
Really? Really? Really?
All right, I will grant that Lacey and Peyton replacing Mandy and Dana is probably for the best if Mandy is injured, because realistically speaking, Dana fulfills no role without Mandy there in order to help further the feud between Mandy and Dana with Shayna and Nia for the women's tag team titles. So, honestly, putting Lacey and Peyton in this match makes more sense, because you can kind of get another team involved with Shayna and Nia, in addition to giving a spotlight to two women that really haven't had much of a spotlight over the course of the last couple of weeks on Raw. The Lana table thing has run its course. Like, I get the idea behind it. I get that they're trying to use it to turn Lana into this super gigantic sympathetic babyface, but newsflash, it's not working. I tried to watch a couple. In deference to our co-host, the co-hostess with the mustaches, Miss Liz Puglisi, I actually tried to watch a couple of Lana's online videos. I made it about 10 minutes. I get that there is an audience that would appreciate her. I'm not a part of that audience. It's not for me. It's not my style. It's not anything I'm interested in seeing. And truthfully, how she comes off in the videos is kind of how she comes off on television to an extent. Very vain, very shallow, very vapid, very all about me. With that being said, I will be curious to see what the reaction will be when Lana finally stands up for herself, assuming she ever does, and this isn't just one gigantic fuck you to Rusev, which has been my stance since day one.
Well, I mean, that's part of the problem, that even if she does stand up for herself, it's not going to be a win over Nia. It's going to be a overcoming the odds, but someone's going to help her, or she's going to take advantage of it and pin her. Like, there's no comeuppance that's going to equate to her being the hero here. This is not a hero's journey at all. It's not even a redemption story. It's just bad writing.
Asuka should have walked out of this match as soon as the bell rang. What does she care?
Should have pulled a Gail Kim and just rolled out.
Or a Randy Orton from last week and refused to tag into this hot mess. I mean, you can kayfabe it that winners share the purse and shit like that, but realistically, is there nobody else on the roster that you couldn't have thrown an Asuka spot and accomplished pretty much the same fucking thing?
Right, I feel like when Asuka was in there, it was the only time actual wrestling was happening. So maybe that's why.
I mean, I will say this much. I think that there's a couple of people in this division that actually do have some talent. And I do think that there's opportunities for women in this division to grow. But being stuck in these generic-ass tag team partners who hate each other storylines is not the way to have any kind of character growth in this division. Unfortunately, tag team partners that hate each other and bitches be crazy seems to be the WWE's default when it comes to the women's division these days. All right, let's move on, because if we keep talking about this, I'm just going to get more upset. And there actually was some good stuff on Raw tonight. The new Firefly Funhouse with Bray Wyatt confronting The Miz and then challenging him to a match a little bit later on in the show, which he has as Funhouse Bray. I like that on two levels. One, the beef with Miz isn't personal, so there's no reason for him to invoke the Fiend. Two, there is a definite chemistry between Wyatt and Alexa, and I did not expect that to be the case. Oh, quit trying to listen, tablet. What happens when you say Alexa in this house? Anyway, what did you make of the Firefly Funhouse, where they show Bray getting ready for a match with Miz a little bit later on in the show?
Rare miss for me with Bray. I guess not rare, because they're probably equally hit or miss. This just didn't land for me at all. Alexa is adorable, and she's been doing great with the role that's given to her. But Bray getting quote-unquote ready, more juvenile bullshit. I mean, yeah, it's a different character, but it's basically John Cena with some Photoshop, spelling, you know, jackass, M-I-Z, and throwing a dart at Rambling Rabbit. I mean, maybe 5-10 years ago, we can explain this by saying it's geared towards kids because that's the WWE product. And I would have probably given it a little bit of a pass, but we're in the reality era now. We're in a slightly different, you know, era. We're not WWE PG. We're not. So this just comes off as more, like, I don't want to blame Pritchard because I'm not in the writer's room, but it seems very consistent with what this guy brings to the table a lot. And you put that with Bray Wyatt, it gives it a little bit of an edge because it's Bray Wyatt. But at the end of the day, you're still watching a grown-ass man spell jackass, M-I-Z.
I actually really enjoyed it.
Well, that's good, Harry.
I think that there needs to be some levity on the show, and this provided that levity. Like I said earlier, this isn't a blood feud between Miz and Wyatt, so Wyatt's not going to take it seriously. And he kind of portrayed it as such by kind of joking around at Miz's expense during the course of the Firefly Funhouse and then coming out as Firefly Bray for their match a little bit later on, which we might as well segue right into. Bray Wyatt pins the Miz with Sister Abigail after Alexa Bliss absolutely wipes John Morrison the fuck out at ringside. Credit to Alexa and Morrison both for that bump that they took there at the end of this match. It's a better bump than either of the guys in the ring took during this match.
Yeah, yeah, I was actually, you know, fearful for her head. but not in like a bad way. I wasn't blaming anybody. It was just kind of scary. But, I mean, the girl's psycho, and I love it, and it's great.
It looked like a really awkward landing for both of them, so. Overall, what did you think of the match between Miz and Bray?
I really liked the match. I liked the Miz. You could tell he's wrestled Bray before, and I mean that kayfabe, you know, not literally, because obviously he's wrestled him before. He had counters for everything. He knew what he was doing. He was aware that Bray was, you know, psycho, and it didn't faze him. Morrison played his part, but not to an annoying level. And also, Bray, just the constant death stares that he was giving out helped out a lot. Alexa being her normal creepy self was great. I thought this was probably the highlight of the night. The biggest problem that I had is that at no point did I ever think that Miz was going to win at all. I think I joked in the report that, you know, not even a big mallet from Seth Rollins could, you know, finish the Fiend. So why would the Miz finish Bray Wyatt? I'm just very glad. I'm very glad that it wasn't a squash. It wasn't a jobber match, because I've said it before. I've been saying it for years. You have the money in the bank briefcase. You are a jobber to the stars until you cash it in. Like, that's how they book it, and it's horrible, but that's what we've known to expect. So seeing him get some actual offense in and actually have some sort of chemistry and realization that, you know, he knows what he's doing with Bray Wyatt, I thought it was a nice change of pace, because by this point I was kind of, you know, dragging on Raw.
Well, the thing with the whole Miz getting offense on Bray is because of the whole it being Firefly Funhouse Bray, and Firefly Bray is a lot more susceptible than Fiend Bray is.
That wouldn't stop them from making it a squash against the Miz. They could have done that, and it wouldn't have surprised me at all.
No, I agree with you. So I was actually pleasantly surprised by how well Miz and Bray held up their end of the bargain tonight. I think we got three really good matches on Raw tonight. I think that match was better than it had any right to be. I think that the tag team title match was actually really good, even though the segment to get us there was stupid. And then I enjoyed the main event. I know you had some issues with the main event. We'll talk about that in a little bit here, but I enjoyed the main event as well. So I think that there was enough wrestling on the show, enough serviceable wrestling for me to be happy with tonight's episode of Raw. Speaking of which, let's talk about that Raw Tag Team title match here, and let's first start with the segment that took us there with the Hurt Business making an announcement that A, Lashley is going to beat the crap out of Sami Zayn, and then Shelton gets some mic time and shows why he doesn't get a lot of mic time. I like you, Shelton, but you're better off as muscle, buddy. Stating that him and Cedric will take out the New Day and become the new Tag Team Champions in order to go on to face the Street Profits. I'm not going to lie. I actually bought this as a viable possibility that they were going to put the belts on the Hurt Business tonight.
Yeah, I kind of consider the same thing. I don't think it would have, like, pissed me off royally. I think that the Hurt Business has been very consistent with the quality of work that they've been doing, both on the mic and in the ring. So it kind of, you know, would have worked out, I think. However, you would have got Hurt Business versus the Street Profits, and not really interested in that.
You know, You know what did piss you off, though? The jerk business.
Yeah, you know, so the reason why I alluded to it just a second ago, you take the Miz and Morrison's promo to open the show, and then you compare it to Kofi and Woods. And the biggest issue that I see here is that they're very, very similar. They both use repetition, they use cheesy jokes, and they use loud noises and loud voices to get over their point. Obviously, they're two very distinctly different tag teams. They are supposed to be two complete, you know, four different characters. When you streamline them to promos like this, then you're basically you're showing your face. And what you see is that it's possible that the same writer or writers are handling both of these scripts. And maybe Kofi and Miz have the freedom, since they've been there for so long, to kind of do their own thing, but they still have to hit certain points. And it just comes off so generic and not funny. It's almost like you want them to dial it back a little bit. And you should never want that. But you tell everyone to throw it all the way up. Like, you know, like go turn it to 11. But, man.
You mentioned before that you thought that the Firefly Funhouse got a little cheesy tonight. I actually think that Kofi's promo was the worst cheese on the evening. Like, legit, I did not care for it at all. And him trying to shush MVP while MVP was actually making a solid comment about do something about it if you think we're jerks. And then Kofi said, hold up, I got my punchline to get to. No, you don't.
Yeah, and MVP called him out on that, which was great. Like, that was your punchline? Fail.
It goes back to what we've been saying for a long time on the show, Tony. MVP has been a highlight on Raw ever since he decided to stick around. The match itself, however, let's give credit to all four men involved, because all four men busted their ass in this match here. A little bit slow going into the commercial break, but you kind of figured it would be. It's WWE format there with regards to these longer matches. But as soon as we came back from the ring, it was balls to the wall. And the New Day pick up the win, keeping the tag team titles. Xavier Woods pins Cedric Alexander after Daybreak, a demolition devastation double stomp instead of just a standard side backbreaker elbow drop. What did you think of the tag team settlement, Tony?
I thought it was a great match. What I don't like is something that I haven't liked just in general is the way that WWE does their matches whenever there's a commercial break. A lot of people confuse this with me not wanting commercial breaks at all, which isn't the case. But it just feels like everything that happens before the commercial matters absolutely zero. Nothing. I'll compare this to the main event real quick. I thought the main event was great. I think that even before the commercials, after the first one at least, everything mattered. Whether it be missing the Claymore or focusing on, you know, taking Randy's stomps. Like, there was a story there. That's what I mean by nothing mattering before the break. So Kofi and Woods and then the Hurt Business, nothing mattered before the break. So the announcer saying, wow, this was an amazing match, he's not wrong. I just feel like you were trying to oversell me on something that was just kind of par for the course. The return after the break, the last, I'd say the third act, if you want to call it that, was amazing. It was beautiful. It was great. And they deserve all the credit in the world for that. But don't try to sell me. And they did it later in the main event too, where they piped in "This is awesome" chants, because I can guarantee you people at home were not chanting "This is awesome" in unison. They also weren't laughing at jokes that Drew said. I don't know, the piped in stuff this tonight just was kind of over the top as well.
I think that's one of the situations where AEW has an advantage with regards to their situation and the setup they have at Daly's Place. If the WWE could get like an amphitheater that would allow actual fans in at a distance, I think it would be much more beneficial than the piped-in stuff that we've been getting inside of the Thunderdome. Because I've said from the start that the Thunderdome audio annoys the fuck out of me.
Yeah, well, I feel bad for the WWE and the fact that they're not going to have their wrestlers come out into the crowd. It's just a different beast. AEW feels like a indie show where all the guys in the crowd would make sense and you kind of get it. WWE, there's like, there's no reason for them to be out there. It's not a boys club, you know, at all.
See, I don't even mean so much that. I mean the fact that with the dailies play setup that AEW has, they can actually have socially distant fans in attendance at the shows, you know?
I also feel bad for when they finally make that decision. No matter what they do, someone's going to just talk shit about how they're letting crowds in or WWE's evil and blah, blah, blah.
The rumor is the WWE moves to Tropicana Field once the residents at Amway Center ends. And I actually think a baseball stadium would be much more conducive for them to have real fans in attendance than a basketball stadium with the setup that they have at Amway would be.
Yeah, well, we'll find out soon enough.
Reports are that end of this month, the WWE leaves the Amway Center. We'll see if that actually happens here. But, all right.
I mean, even if they do, we got shutdowns happening all over the country, so.
To WWE stop and producing shows, neither is AEW. Worst case scenario is they go back to the Performance Center, they record a couple of matches, and then they do the highlight shows like they did when this thing first happened. And then Harry and Tony take a break from the reaction because I don't know if I can subject myself to that.
It's really hard to review those shows.
When the matches are from like 2012? Yeah, I agree. What did you think of the Sheamus Drew McIntyre segment backstage where Sheamus brought McIntyre the chest with his Scottish stuff?
I will say this is the first week that I saw a lot of people talking about an inevitable Sheamus versus Drew match. And prior to those comments, I was under the impression that this is leading to a possible tag team. So I'm interested to see what you think, if your mind has changed at all. Do you think this is the start of a feud between the two or the start of an inevitable tag team with the two?
Tony, I hate to break your heart, but I always felt this ended in Sheamus and McIntyre at WrestleMania in a singles match.
Yeah, that's assuming that they're planning that far ahead.
Well, yeah, there's that. No, I like the concept behind McIntyre and Sheamus tagging, and I actually do have them tag in my own personal Fed that I do, that I've mentioned before. They are actually a tag team with William Regal as their manager. But with regards to the whole setup that they've done here, you can see the interaction that they have with each other and how like they're playing off of each other. That while it would work as a tag team, one week Drew's more invested, the next week Sheamus is more invested, the next week Drew is more invested. There's no mutuality with regards to most of their conversations, in my opinion. It's always focused one way or another. And you could see that look in Sheamus' eyes when McIntyre kept saying that his main focus was getting the WWE Championship back. It was subtle things throughout the backstage segments that they did, and they don't do subtlety well in the WWE very often. But this was one of those instances where there were subtle things in these backstage segments. You could definitely tell it was setting them up to feud with each other, even though I wasn't expecting it to be for the heavyweight championship, as we find out later on in the broadcast.
I mean, the good news is, whether it's a tag team or a one-on-one match, they're starting super early, and that's great because it gives it time to simmer, gives you some time to enjoy it, gives you little skits like tonight. Although, you know, finding a chest from your ancestors is a little hokey. It still just brings the whole, you know, talking about Drew's mom. I'm enjoying what's going on there.
Well, this was actually a throwback to the McIntyre 24/7 that I know you didn't get to watch because you're a busy man running a sports bar and everything. But this was what he came out to the ring in tonight, the kilt that he was wearing tonight, was the same kilt that he wore when he first broke into the business.
Yeah, I know where it's from. It's just it's, you know, the history of it is, you know, very, very, very much there.
You're feeling it's also very, very, very much Hocusaurus.
Just a little bit. Nothing compared to, you know, spelling jackass like the Miz and Kofi's promo. So yeah, if we had to put those on a rating scale, Drew McIntyre's gear is more towards the like cheesy but makes sense and kind of cool in its own way. Because especially the way Drew sold it. Drew sold it as like a very heart touching, you know, moment and coming out basically saying like, you know, he's gonna win, and it just all tied in together. He won the title. Just a lot of everything worked there. So yeah, I'm not gonna put it down completely.
Okay, we're about to disagree on something, and I know that's gonna come as a huge shock to you. Because we never disagree on this podcast.
Never.
The Elias Jeff Hardy thing. I really like that they're continuing with this the way that they are here, because Elias has a point. It seems like the whole thing with him getting hit with a car was just fucking dropped. And Elias wants answers.
I mean, we had to go there. Jeff Hardy, the character, is just, he's something else, you know? I don't know. Maybe they'll come around to it. Maybe they'll come back to Sheamus doing it or somehow bringing him. It just seems like that storyline for Sheamus is behind him, whereas for everybody else, it's, you know, front and center.
You mentioned that you were disappointed in Jeff grabbing Elias by his facial hair and pushing him up against the wall. Somebody was accusing me of vehicular assault. I'd be pretty pissed off at him, too.
I'm not mad at him grabbing his – it just all came off as, like, somewhat ridiculous. It just – it didn't ring true. Both with Jeff's promo beforehand where he went, like, extreme metaphor to the point where you could tell that was written – to him asking for an amen. I know it was supposed to come off as cool. It wasn't. That was hokey. I know how mad he is, but you don't get accused of hitting someone with a car and then go in there and say you're gonna do something worse. I don't know. That's kind of premeditated manslaughter. Just saying, Jeff. You might get in trouble.
Okay, I know you're a Pro Wrestling Guerrilla fan. It actually reminds me of an Excalibur quote from Pro Wrestling Guerrilla that always makes me chuckle when I think about it. That's premeditation. That's the difference between manslaughter and murder one.
Yes.
One of my favorite Excalibur calls of all time. I'm okay with the Jeff Hardy Elias storyline here. I think that neither one of them has anything better to be doing right now. It keeps them active. It keeps them involved in the WWE fan base's line of sight. And I like the fact that they're not just haphazardly sweeping this under the rug like it was the White Hummer in WCW, that they're going to eventually play out this storyline to a conclusion.
We'll see.
Now, if this gets dropped in a couple of months, I'm going to be pissed that we wasted so much TV time on this bullshit. But for now, benefit of the doubt. Call me Mr. Brightside, Tony.
Sure.
All right. Alexa and Nikki, any interest in a singles match there? I'm going to shut you off, tablet. Knock it off.
I think the singles match is inevitable. I think that it's one of those things that is kind of supposed to happen. And it's an easy notch on the belt of Alexa. Although I can't remember the last time we saw her wrestle, so it'd be nice to see her in a match. I know it hasn't been that long. It just feels like a long time. But Nikki, I don't know. There's just... Again, you know, I hate sounding like a, you know, broken record, but the writing just isn't that good. You have Nikki looking for her friend and then runs out to the stage. And, you know, before that, she says, I'll never, ever, ever give up on Alexa. And then one hit and she just mounts Alexa and starts punching her to smithereens. I don't know if that's tough love. I don't know if that's, like, geez, I don't know. Just
okay.
Person, like, from the standpoint of a person getting slapped, yes, of course you're gonna fight back. But it doesn't follow well when she cuts the promo that she cut.
It does, to me. And the reason I say that is, if you can't see this for yourself, then I'm gonna help you see it, even if I have to physically beat some sense into you.
Oh, okay. So okay. You're writing for them again. Okay.
Listen here, Tony. The problem with that, though, is it's playing kind of into the Fiends. It's playing kind of into Bray Wyatt's hands by having Nikki attack her here. Because Bray could use this to point out what a bad friend Nikki is being by the fact that she attacked Alexa when Alexa didn't see things her way.
Yeah, he's not going to do that. He also doesn't need to do it. It's the brainwashing is done. You know, this match will end with Nikki losing and Alexa continuing. This is her character from now on. But I mean, at the very least, we're getting a match out of it that has, you know, has some merit to it and a story going into it. It's about verbiage and execution. That's all. It's about consistency of character and character work, and this has nothing to do with Nikki. Honestly, I think every critique that I've had tonight has nothing to do with the performer at all. It's continuously bad writing.
Did you understand Nia's shot towards Quibi? I didn't get that.
Nia's shot towards who?
Quibi, like that 10-minute TV show thing.
I'm sorry, I'm getting another call, so I didn't hear you. Don't worry, I'm ignoring it. But what was that?
The shot that Nia took towards Quibi in the backstage segment.
Oh, yeah, I don't really know what Quibi is, but I did hear her shot.
It's like a TV thing that's like all the episodes are 10 minutes or less or whatever. I don't know either. I don't subscribe. I have enough wrestling subscriptions. I'm not taking the time to subscribe to something that I'm not going to watch.
Well, Nia sure does know her humor.
If there is one thing we have learned, she is definitely a bastion of the comedy genre. Oh, no, that she needs to be bashed in. Never mind. They're writing my lines now, too, Tony.
Well, A for effort.
All right, let's move on here. What did you think of the hype package for Randy and Drew? I really liked it.
It was great. I think I maybe came off a little wrong this morning, earlier in the show. I enjoyed the main event, and I enjoyed Drew winning. It calls into question why give Randy the belt anyway. I think this was one of those rare occasions where either man winning would have been fine, but the big match is Drew versus Roman. For sure. It just feels more blockbuster, you know?
I mean, I get that, but at the same time, my problem lies with why take the belt off of Drew in the first place at Hell in a Cell.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely my question. Yeah, that's the thing that I'm considering. Like, why give it to Randy at all?
Exactly. Hold on, I'm having a little pause.
Barely.
All right, hold on. Let's see if I can't fix it. How about now?
Yeah, you're great.
All right, cool. I switched over to my Bluetooth headset. All right, so that actually takes us up to the main event here because we already talked about the announcement of Peyton Royce and Lacey Evans to the team on Raw. It takes us up to the main event as Drew McIntyre challenged Randy Orton for the WWE Heavyweight Championship. And originally we saw Orton try to get himself counted out not once but twice, but Adam Pearce comes out and makes the match no countouts, no disqualifications, which I liked that it was Adam Pearce that did it because it was kind of Pearce getting a little bit of revenge for Orton putting his hands on him last week on Raw. Tony.
Yeah, were you asking a question?
What were your thoughts on Adam Pearce being the one to make the match no count out, no disqualification?
I felt the same way you did. It felt very, par for the course for Adam Pearce, person in a leadership role, to say, you know what, you tried to rough me up last week, so here's your no DQ match, which really lent to the match because although it didn't overtake everything, the table spots, the missed Claymore, the work outside, the table shots, or the table drop that Orton did, all of that came into play and made the match a lot better than it would have been had it been a regular wrestling match, especially considering we've had these guys damn near murder each other in an ambulance and a Hell in a Cell match, and then we get a lockup to start up the match, you know?
I was going to say, that felt weird that this match wasn't no count out, no disqualification from the start, given the fact that we're coming off of one of the biggest stipulations in the WWE in the Hell in a Cell match. And the match before that, like you just mentioned, was a stipulation we rarely see used anymore in the ambulance match. So you would have thought that both of these guys would have come in fists to flying instead of actually trying to wrestle.
Yeah.
All things considered, though, I think that they made really good use of the time that they were given once we came back from that commercial where it was announced that it was going to be a no disqualification match. Everything after that mattered. You talked about how there's a certain way that matches feel when they're going more than when they're going to a commercial break and stuff, but this one had multiple commercial breaks even after that original one where they announced that it was going to be no disqualification. And you said so earlier in the show yourself, but I agree with you that there was never really that drop-off in terms of effort level and in terms of anticipation as to what was going to happen next between these two for the rest of the match.
Yeah, I enjoyed it, and I do feel that it was a much better story being told than what we got, you know, in other matches. Excuse me. Sorry about that.
You're fine.
This, again, I don't want to find something to complain about here. I don't. It's not – I'm not looking for something to bitch about. The only question is minor is why did Orton get the belt to begin with? But even that, even not having that answer is kind of fine because, you know, we're saying from a – like we're looking at it from an analytical standpoint, like why did he get rid of the belt so much? But in terms of a competition or a fight, you get people that – they win, they lose, you know, they had a bad night, you got roughed up, bleeding internally, like you internally, you got any story. So it's really not too unbelievable. Drew is a main event player and him getting his title back just seems like a really feel good moment. So I can't knock the way Raw went off the air.
Well, let's also look at the history of Survivor Series over the last couple of years and the fact that these champions versus champions matches have been some marquee performances. Consider the fact that, yeah, it was Lesnar that was the champion for most of those matches, but it's still Lesnar versus guys like Daniel Bryan, Finn Balor, AJ Styles. They've been phenomenal wrestling matches, no pun intended, with AJ Styles being one of the matches participants. I don't know that Randy Orton and Roman Reigns would be capable of putting up with a performance that Reigns and McIntyre could have. Because we've seen Reigns and Orton before on pay-per-view. To be honest, the match was kind of underwhelming. It wasn't a bad match. It's just for what we know these guys are capable of, it should have been better.
Yeah, and the characters that they have right now are both very slow-moving, you know, plotting, manipulative, yeah, just not, does not bode well for pops or big moments.
Not to mention, I think that whole heel versus heel aspect as well is something that they tend to shy away from. And I think that might be the reason why they decided to go the way they did. You can almost say that Lashley's a de facto babyface in the Intercontinental Title U.S. title match. Sammy's such a belligerent dick. He's fantastic. That wraps us up for this episode of All, Sammy. You want to do final reaction here, or do you want to go ahead and do our prediction first?
It doesn't matter.
All right, well, then we'll do the final reaction here real quick. Favorite match or moment from this week on television?
I mean, Sasha Banks appearing. But no, I want to give it to Miz and Bray. I expected nothing. I expected a squash match. That's what I expected. I expected Miz to get his ass handed to him, and they gave me something fun to watch.
I'm going to go with the Rey Mysterio and Seth Rollins match from SmackDown. I actually really enjoyed it. I think that we've seen enough of those two against each other to be satisfied with them not facing off, and I'm sure Liz, if she were here, would agree, because Liz dislikes most things Rey Mysterio, so she doesn't want to see him at all, but that's beside the point. But I think if Liz were here, she would agree with the fact that you could argue that between out of all the matches they've had so far, that this past Friday on SmackDown was easily their best effort together. Least favorite match or moment from the week?
Oh, man. Take your pick.
I'm going to cheat.
I'm just going to go with the promo work for Monday Night Raw. Just, no promo was good. Some were varying levels, but in terms of quality of writing, just no.
I'm going to cheat. I'm going to say Zelina Vega. I'm sad.
Well, she seems happy with her decision, so I'm proud of her.
And I'm sure wherever she wants to land, when she's ready to land, she'll land. She said she's not done with wrestling, and I firmly believe that she's freezing, right? Anyway, I firmly believe that she's not. I do think that being the most outspoken critic of the Twitch policy worked against her, and they decided to make an example out of her once they found out about the OnlyFans thing that she was doing for the cosplay and bikini photos. So, realistically, I understand both sides of this here. I understand Zelina wanting to keep it for the extra income. I understand the WWE wanting to subsidize it since they're using their own likeness and their own names a lot of times that they have under WWE trademark property. The whole independent contract is like bullshit. That's neither here nor there. Actual favorite match. You know what? I'll go with Chelsea Green's unfortunate break. Because I would have been really curious to see what they would have done with Chelsea at Survivor Series. Although, in a way, this kind of works to Chelsea's benefit, because I doubt she would have been a survivor of the match on Sunday. And this way, they don't have to hang a loss on her.
Yeah, wasn't her time.
Overall show rating for Raw, Tony?
I believe I rated it a 5.5, and I'm going to stand by that.
You did, and I disagree. I gave it the same rating I gave SmackDown. I gave it a 7. Whereas I felt like SmackDown kind of underwhelmed in terms of the in-ring performances, because while I enjoyed the Rey Mysterio and Seth Rollins match, the main event was a little underwhelming to me. I don't think that McIntyre needed to be there in the first place, and I never once thought Uso was having a chance against McIntyre. Tonight on Raw, the tag team title match as well as the main event were both matches that I couldn't call going into them, because I thought we could have seen two title changes, or we could have just as easily seen no title changes tonight. And then we also had that really solid Miz and Bray Wyatt match tonight as well. So I was really impressed by the in-ring content on tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw. Promo-wise,
cool.
Yeah, it kind of sucked. It kind of sucked, let's be real. Stuff isn't anything I'm going to remember next week. Next week I'll still be talking about how good the Orton McIntyre and how good the Titan title match this week was. Who's your MVP for the week, Tony?
Sasha Banks.
I too.
Man, I hope she's a woman, but I actually have clean.
You're funny.
Yes. Just wait.
I'm going with Alexa for my MVP for the week. Stop it, tablet. Jesus Christ. upset. I'm going with Little Miss Bliss. I'm gonna have to call her that from now on. Apparently, when my Kindle Kindle's turned on, it picks up on that cue. Anyway. All right, so four matches to predict real quick here. You ready?
Yep.
So you're seriously picking Alexa? Or not Alexa. You're seriously picking Sasha?
Oh, for
the,
sure.
The
yeah.
Raw versus Women.
She's going to win clean.
Yeah, I'm taking Asuka via pinfall. Sasha goes for the bank statement, and Asuka rolls her up and gets the three.
All right.
One of us will have bragging rights come next Monday, assuming you actually get to watch the fucking pay-per-view, Tony.
I might be able to.
How's things out in California currently?
I mean, it's kind of hard to say that things are good because, you know, people literally died. The restaurant is doing really well with what we're able to do, but I'm getting news reports literally right now that one county away, they are shutting things down. They're like in level purple, which I didn't even know that they had color levels, but apparently, a county away, which I'd say is roughly 20 minutes away from me driving, is shutting all of their businesses down. So it's possible that we will have to close temporarily.
Or at the very least, go back to your original model of being delivery or pickup only.
Right, right.
I mean, obviously, as a bartender, that kind of sucks, but you're more of like the restaurant manager now, so you wouldn't as effective like that as staff that actually works.
I mean, there's good and bad that could come with it. There's, I mean, we could talk for hours about how, you know, a small sacrifice for the greater good, no Seth Rollins, you know, pun like intended, but it's something that me as a singular human being would be willing to do. But, you know, I got a whole staff to worry about. So we'll see. We'll see. I'm not going to, you know, stress about it right now.
All right. I'll talk more about that when we wrap up the show. Let's do the rest of the predictions here. Lashley versus Sami Zayn. Lashley trucks him, right? Lashley pinfall spear.
Yeah. I would love for Sami to, like, weasel his way out of this and pick up the win just to – because he would – man, he would brag till the, you know – till the sun went down, and it would be amazing. And he could run with a win way more than Lashley could. But it just makes sense for Lashley to win because, you know, he's part of the Hurt Business.
Did we ever discuss what Sami did on Twitter after he won the Triple Threat Ladder match? Did I bring that to your attention or not?
I mean, I follow him. I recall him saying that, you know, he never lost and that they're saying the new IC champ, and he's like, I'm not the new, I'm still, you know.
Well, WWE on Fox stated out something along, now he's never going to shut up after they tweeted out a picture of him winning the title in the Classic
yeah.
Champions ladder match. Sami tweeted back something along the lines of, you goddamn right. Which is just so in character for Sami. And it makes me chuckle. All right, let's move on. Street Profits versus New Day. I can't call this one. This should be really interesting to see which way they go here. Officially, I'm going to pick the New Day, as you respect the OGs in the tag team division in this regard, and I think the Street Profits are willing. I think the Street Profits are more capable of taking a loss here. Plus, I think it could lead to something with Big E on the back end.
Yeah, this match doesn't matter because they're just going to go back to their respective shows and that'll be that. So I'm thinking the Street Profits are going to win because the New Day wants to give them a little bit of a rub.
Do you think we see anything further with the Profits and Big E?
I don't really want to.
Because of the fact that you want Big E pushed in a different direction. That. The main event will be Roman Reigns and Drew McIntyre, champion versus champion. I think you're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't here. I think Roman has to win because Roman's character needs to win more than Drew does. But at the same time, I think having Drew lose this match after showing up on SmackDown to confront Roman last week kind of does him more damage than what he should really be able to afford, having just gotten the title back.
Yeah, I think no matter what happens, it won't be clean.
Fair. Officially, I'm picking Roman. I wouldn't be surprised if Jey Uso is the deciding factor.
Well,
who do you got?
I think Roman too, but just to be a contrarian, I'll pick Drew.
Well, you already disagreed on one match. Well, technically, now we've disagreed on three out of the four matches. I guess that will crown a winner. What's your interest level in the Raw and SmackDown Women's Survivor Series matches? Any?
Nope.
Well, I have a way to make these matches matter. You ready?
Sure.
If you're going to be so damn dependent on putting people into these matches where you have these tag team partners who can't get along sticks on both shows, they're doing the same thing for the men's and women's, for the men's on both sides of the shows, with Corbin and fuck, who was it on SmackDown? The Corbin wasn't long. Regardless, with the people on SmackDown that weren't getting along and then the people on Raw that weren't getting along, here's my idea to make this matter. You ready?
Sure.
The surviving members of the winning team get a heavyweight title shot at the next pay-per-view, or a women's title shot in case of the women's team for their respective brand's title.
Yeah, I'm still not interested.
Way to poo-poo my idea. I thought it was pretty good. Feel free to tweet at TonyAcero411 and tell him how wrong he is.
Yeah, do it.
And Tony will just ignore you. That's kind of what he does. Where can people find you online, Tony?
411mania.com and Twitter, TonyAcero411. Do it.
Chairshot.com, you can find my articles. I'm going to be starting to get back into writing reviews of shows again. Hopefully I'll be more coherent on those than I was at certain points during tonight's episode of The Reaction. I don't know what the hell happened. I was stumbling all over myself something serious earlier tonight. For that, I apologize. But, yeah, so chairshot.com for my reviews. I already have a little bit of an archive available there. I'm going to go back into the archive and edit in my ratings for these matches now that Andrew Blass no longer has the sole proprietary ownership of star ratings on the chairshot. So that'll be happening, and then I'll be starting to type out new content for the section. In addition, you can find me on all of your social media programs at ATV the Eagle, including Grapple, where you can get first access to my show review ratings. By checking out Grapple, I post my reviews there, my star ratings for the shows right after the pay-per-view, usually a day or so after. Find that there. I'm at ATB Eagle on Grapple, T-R-A-P-P-L, available in the App Store on either Google Play or on the Apple Store called?
The App Store.
Thank you. I have an Android. I don't do that Apple shit. I also have a Kindle. I don't know if it's available on the Kindle or not, but if you want to, you can try to look there, too. Anything else to plug before we get out of here, Tony?
Nope, that's it.
Shout-out to Adam Feline of the Minnesota Vikings tonight. One of your favorite teams. Adam Feline wore Alex Trebek tribute sneakers for tonight's Monday Night Football game. The class act. He is the Down Since Day One co-host, Tony Acero. I am the voice of reason, allegedly, Harry Broadhurst. to the absent co-hostess with the mostest, Miss Elizabeth Lucy. We thank you for listening to this week's episode of The Reaction. We will be back at you next Monday night at 11:30 p.m. Eastern as we discuss the fallout from the Survivor Series as well as the start of the road to tables, ladders, and chairs here on The Reaction, a presentation of the Chair Shop Radio Network. Tony, send us home.
Deuces, bitches.
Not going to play all the music and everything tonight. Thanks for listening, guys. I apologize for kind of stumbling over myself at the start of the show. Haven't been feeling the greatest, just starting to do my podcast again. Hopefully I'll start feeling a little bit better as we get more and more back into them. Liz, our thoughts are with you and Mama Pukusi. Hopefully everything works out okay, and we'll see you guys next week. You've been listening to The Reaction, a presentation of the Chairshot Radio Network, online at thechairshot.com and available on all of your favorite podcast listening services such as iTunes, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Speaker, Podbean, CastBox. I think we're even on Spotify, but I have to check that one to make sure. I'll let you know next week for sure. So listen, I'll see you next week here on The Reaction.